I have just seen my former schoolmate, Claranus, for the first time in many years. You need not wait for me to add that he is an old man, but I assure you that I found him hale in spirit and sturdy, although he is wrestling with a frail and feeble body. For nature acted unfairly when she gave him a poor domicile for so rare a soul, and perhaps it was because she wished to prove to us that an absolutely strong and happy mind can lie hidden under any exterior. Be that as it may, Claranus overcomes all these hindrances and by despising his own body has arrived at a stage where he can despise other things also. The poet who sang, "Worth shows more pleasing in a form that's fair," is, in my opinion, mistaken. For virtue needs nothing to set it off. It is its own great glory, and it hallows the body in which it dwells. At any rate, I have begun to regard Claranus in a different light. He seems to me handsome, and as well set up in body as in mind. A great man can spring from a hovel, so can a beautiful and great soul from an ugly and insignificant body. For this reason, nature seems to me to breed certain men of this stamp with the idea of proving that virtue springs into birth in any place whatsoever. Had it been possible for her to produce souls by themselves and naked, she would have done so. As it is, nature does a still greater thing, for she produces certain men who, though hampered in their bodies, nonetheless break through the obstruction. I think Claranus has been produced as a pattern that we might be enabled to understand that the soul is not disfigured by the ugliness of the body, but rather the opposite, that the body is beautified by the comeliness of the soul. Now, though Claranus and I have spent very few days together, we have nonetheless had many conversations, which I will at once pour forth and pass on to you. The first day, we investigated this problem. How can goods be equal if they are of three kinds? For certain of them, according to our philosophical tenets, are primary, such as joy, peace, and the welfare of one's country. Others are of the second order, molded in an unhappy material, such as the endurance of suffering and self-control during severe illness. We shall pray outright for the goods of the first class. For the second class, we shall pray only if the need shall arise. There is still a third variety, as, for example, a modest gait, a calm and honest countenance, and a bearing that suits the man of wisdom. Now, how can these things be equal when we compare them if you grant that we ought to pray for the one and avoid the other? If we would make distinctions among them, we had better return to the first good and consider what its nature is. The soul that gazes upon truth, that is skilled in what should be sought and what should be avoided, establishing standards of virtue not according to opinion, but according to nature. The soul that penetrates the whole world and directs its contemplating gaze upon all its phenomena, paying strict attention to thoughts and actions, equally great and forceful, superior alike to hardships and blandishments, yielding itself to neither extreme of fortune, rising above all blessings and tribulations, absolutely beautiful, perfectly equipped with grace as well as with strength, healthy and sinewy, unruffled, undismayed, one which no violence can shatter, one which acts of chance can neither exalt nor depress. A soul like this is virtue itself.